It's the day after Thanksgiving, and as is traditional here in the States, I am at a Doctor Who convention with my wife Dee and our children, and we're talking to our old friend Ross Mullen, who's big in the Doctor Who. How many creatures on Doctor Who have you played?
Well, I've actually only played two, but they're two pretty iconic characters, and I'm also on Game of Thrones as well, and I play an iconic character on that.
We have so much to talk about.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 471, Doctor Who Creatures. You are probably one of the dozens of listeners who will be watching the Doctor Who Christmas special this Friday, so it seemed like the perfect time to share with you my conversation with our friend Ross Mullen, who has made a great career for himself as a London-based puppeteer and creature performer. Ross has played several creatures on Doctor Who and was in Chicago over the Thanksgiving weekend for the Chicago TARDIS Convention, along with Paul McGann, Alex Kingston, Dan Starkey, and Samuel Anderson. It was a great time with lots of cool stuff. On top of everything else, I got to pose for a picture in the actual TARDIS. But best of all, Ross was good enough to sit down with me and my wife, Dee Ryan, to talk about how one becomes a creature on this legendary show.
Before we start talking about the specific creatures you played, how did you even get into playing creatures? It seems like an odd choice for a young man setting out on a career of performing.
Well, it's really weird. I was puppeteering for about 4 years in kids' television.
In the UK?
In the UK, yeah.
You're from Canada originally?
Canada originally, reside in the UK for 25 years now. Uh-huh. I was working on a kids' TV show called Bear Behaving Badly, and my agent phoned up and said, Lucinda Sison, who is casting for Clash of the Titans, wants to audition you for the Djinn Warrior in the remake of Clash. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And I went down to the casting, and Lucinda said, listen, you're here for two reasons. I want to audition you in all good faith, but my niece is a really big fan of your show. Will you sign an autograph for me? So I said, absolutely. So sign an autograph. I'm kind of camp, so I did my audition, you know. And she said, you know what? We've actually been thinking of casting men to play the blind witches in Clash. And I was like...
That's an iconic.
Yeah.
These are iconic roles.
And I thought, I would love to do this. And she said, we're looking for something creepy, something disgusting, and something sexy. Can you just... We'll turn the camera on and let you do whatever. And I was...
And I'm looking at you now, and all of that is in your bag of tricks.
Of course. I said, can I take my shoes and socks off? She said, as long as it's just your shoes and socks. Yes. And I got the job. And then from that, I got on to Game of Thrones, because it was the same prosthetics makeup guy. It was Connor O'Sullivan, who did...
Okay, but which one did you end up playing in class? Okay.
I ended up playing... No, just the very tall, super overweight one who had her hair up. It was actually on TV last night, strangely enough, yeah.
That's funny. Clash of the Titans, okay.
All right.
The remake.
The eye, give me the eye. And I'm also the one who gets very close to Sam Worthington, and I go, flesh of a god, and I stick my tongue in his ear. I'm like,
And they paid you.
And they paid me.
Then you hooked up with the
Connor O'Sullivan, who did very famously did Nicole Kidman's nose in The Hours, was the makeup artist for Clash, and he was then my makeup artist on Game of Thrones.
Okay.
And then from Game of Thrones...
And in Game of Thrones, not to rush too far past that, you are the White Walker for the first several seasons.
In season 2, 3, and 4, I am the White Walker, the one that... Well, I think they said in People Magazine said it was the most watched season finale since JR got shot. So I think we came number two. So I kind of thought, I'll take that.
That's still pretty good. But what is that? What did that involve becoming the White Walker? Was it just facial makeup? I mean, it seemed like a lot of close-ups and horseback riding.
Yeah.
Was it full body makeup just in your face?
Yeah, it is. It's 5 hours in makeup.
Wow.
So it's like a wetsuit, but it's all built and molded to my body. So I do one full day they have a whole body cast.
Okay.
And then when I'm on set, really, all of the makeup goes on in tiny little pieces all over my face, and the wig and all of the hands. But the real work comes in with the blending so that you don't see the seams in the makeup.
Right.
So they spend hours and hours and hours making that all work, especially around the eyes when you do close-ups. So that's on the day, but the build-up for that is a series of screen tests, which is about 6 or 7 screen tests you do.
And then also, they're not testing you, they're testing the makeup.
Just testing the makeup, yeah. I'm already at quids in, you know. They're not going to give me... I already fit the suit, so whether I'm dead or alive, I'm going to be there. They'll prop me up.
Are the eyes contact lenses, or are they CGI?
Yeah. They give us these big black contact lenses to cover the entire eyeball, which are excruciatingly painful to put in, so I have an optometrist do it for me on set. And I'm a big baby, and I'm like boo-hoo-hoo the whole time. But also, I do 4 months of horseback riding before I start. So I get training with the Devil's Horsemen, who are these amazing stunt people who I go out to a stud farm just in Milton Keynes. And that's where some of the best people have trained. They trained Angelina Jolie to ride a horse for the Tomb Raider. Is that Tomb Raider?
Lara Croft.
Yeah, the Lara Croft. Scarlett Johansson trained out there as well. They got all their horses for War Horse there. They're really amazing.
Stud farm in Milton Keynes, which is a phrase I never thought I would ever say.
Run by an amazing French guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow, that sounds pretty cool. And what can you do now on a horse?
Well, I can do a lot on a horse, but what will they let me do on a horse on set? Not very much. And that goes for most actors. You're only really allowed to walk and trot. They don't like you to go too fast. But I ride bareback, which I had to for Game of Thrones. I can get up to speed on it. You know, I can pretty much, you know, ride out on it.
And you couldn't ride a horse before?
No, never ridden a horse before.
Wow.
And also some of the stunt team showed me how to use a ring, like a sort of a stunt ring. So I would hold on to it and put your foot into the hook, and you can lift one leg off, and you can kind of lean onto one side, or you can even turn around and ride sort of around the world, go kind of backwards, and go down, touch your toe and stuff.
Well, and then in upcoming auditions, you can now answer, yes, I can ride a horse.
I can, although I'm a little skeptical. You know, you're really well looked after on Game of Thrones, and you have to be really careful when people just kind of go, can you ride a horse? I always say, yeah, I can ride a horse, but I would always want to be on set with somebody who is my wrangler as well.
Yeah, right.
Because depending on what you're doing on set, like on Game of Thrones, we had a lot of snowstorms, which are all shredded paper and soap, under a big, big, you know, fan, under the wrong kind of tutelage and the wrong type of people, you could get into a really bad accident with a horse.
Yeah.
Although they're really well-trained animals,
right.
I'd like to know where they're coming from, really, because I don't want to end up dead.
I think that's a very wise precaution. How did that inevitably lead to your work on Doctor Who, or was there a kind of a... How did that happen?
Well, Doctor Who happened because they do a BBC Proms, Doctor Who-themed BBC Proms at the Royal Albert Hall every so often. And they had the Ice Warrior coming out of the middle of the Royal Albert Hall in a big block of plastic ice. Now, Spencer Wilding plays the Ice Warrior on the show. He was shooting something else, and he recommended me to fill in the suit. He said, Ross is the exact same size as me, which is not true, because he's 6'6 and built like this big. He's a kickboxer.
Uh-huh.
I went in, I did the job. They were very pleased. And then they had somebody drop out as the Silence for Matt Smith's last episode, so they asked me to fill in for that. And then once I'd done 2 creatures for them, they said, listen, we had a meeting over Christmas, and we would like to offer you an original monster of your own, which was the Teller, which was really lovely. So I've been kind of on and off working for them, really. They just kind of call me in to do work, which is really nice because they're a great team.
You're listening to Tim Minchin, randomly standing here with Austin and et al. In Washington, D.C., and you are listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Wow!
Where can you RSC the RSC? Right now, the best place to RSC us is online, on Facebook and Twitter, where we're very active and enjoy going back and forth with fans. In terms of RSCing us in person, we have no performances left in 2015, but we'll pick up again in January with performances of The Complete History of Comedy Abridged and The Complete History of America Abridged in Ohio, Michigan, and Georgia. We'll be adding more 2016 dates in the new year, and of course, in April and May of 2016, we'll perform the official RSC premiere of William Shakespeare's long-lost first play Abridged at the Folger Shakespeare Theater in Washington, D.C. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Ross Mullen at last month's Chicago TARDIS convention, which is actually the next thing I asked him about. And I consider ourselves big nerds, big fantasy sci-fi nerds, but we've never been to a convention. And this has been of a wake-up call for us as well. What are they like for you?
I love them. You know, before, hey, Sarah's just joined us, who's the weeping angel.
Now we're sitting next to a weeping angel as well, which is pretty amazing.
Eyes like cried open.
So the silence and the weeping angel are actually really good friends.
And you guys are adorable looking.
Aww.
Not at all threatening and intimidating.
Yeah, coming to these conventions, when I was first asked to do them after Game of Thrones, you know, you hear all these things like, oh my God, it was so weird, it's going to be bizarre, or they're going to be freaky. I have found the people really, really, really lovely. I love meeting the fans. I think it's wonderful that people, you know, they take time, they have a day or two out of the year where they attend these conferences or these conventions and they get dressed up. I think it's great. I wished I had something like this to go to, like a Real Housewives convention that I could dress up as one of the Real Housewives and go.
Sure, absolutely.
But I love the people. They're awesome. I've never really had anybody uncomfortable here.
That's great. My fear is always that, you know, actors play in this fantasy world and your fantasy is sometimes a fan's reality. And if they can't kind of separate the two, then I can see how that would be a little nervous making.
Yeah, it is. It's funny. I mean, I get a lot of fan mail as well at home, from especially Doctor Who fans. And it's really beautiful when you read through some of their fan mail, because they spend like sometimes 6-7 pages telling me about their experience with Doctor Who since they were a child. So they've been watching it since the 1960s, and maybe they're even older than myself now, or the same age. And they remind me that I'm kind of part of their history, and they welcome me to this kind of family, which is really, really lovely and endearing, you know?
It really is. And to be part of something that is so long-lived,
yeah,
as Doctor Who, and so international. I mean, you are part, well, in Game of Thrones as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. Did you think the White Walker would be such an iconic image? I mean, that is, I mean, if we mention to people that you're a white, people, whoa.
Even people who don't watch Game of Thrones.
Everyone knows the image of the White Walker.
For much of the first season of Game of Thrones, I was going, hey, this is before I knew you were the White Walker.
Yeah.
I was going, can we get back to the White Walker and the Direwolves? Because that's kind of the show I want to be watching.
Maybe a spinoff series for the White Walker.
Indeed. The real White Walkers.
Real White Walkers of Westeros.
Yes.
How's that? I think that'd be really good.
That is.
We have a bump at the beginning. Dun, da-da-na, dun, dun, da-da-na.
That is money in the bank, baby. So you've been a puppeteer, you've played creatures,
yeah,
and now you said you're starting to, is that River Song in her astronaut outfit, right? I believe it is.
Yeah.
And now you said you're starting to act as yourself, as a real person, human being. How's that going?
Well, kind of, you know. I've in the last couple of years, I played a Polish gangster, an English hitman. I just played an English aging drag queen who was dying as well.
Okay.
I very rarely play myself, but I'm working on a pilot which will be sort of incorporating that without giving too much away. It's about an actor who's a creature performer. So
where do these people get their ideas?
Yeah, amazing. I don't know. It just came out of my head. But yeah, I'm working on that, and I'm working on a sci-fi thing for the new year as well, which will be really cool. I'm playing a very evil character. I play generally evil people.
Yeah, what is up with that?
My ugly face.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your favorite creature via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook or Twitter, and I hope you'll post reviews of this podcast on iTunes. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, 27th companion Matthew Croke, music by John Weber and GarageBand, and by Murray Gold, whose track Back to Christmas from the Doctor Who episode The Time of the Doctor you heard at the top of this podcast. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Emmy Rose. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to singer-songwriter Tim Minchin, who, in addition to writing the fabulous score for the musical of Matilda, is a bit of an international sensation in his own right. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. Let me be among the very last people to wish you a happy, merry Christmas Quantica Hanzica this holiday season. I'm Austin Titchener, 471 1413th of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Do you have any upcoming appearances on Doctor Who that we should be looking for, or Game of Thrones, or anything?
I may be in this Christmas's episode of Doctor Who, possibly, if I didn't end up on the editing floor. So just look out for me.
Just we'll look out for you in the background.
I can't say too much, but that's all right. Perhaps.
No spoilers, darling.
Is Jon Snow dead?
Jon Snow is both dead and alive.
There, you heard it here first. You heard it here first.
Me just making it up.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less. So much less.